The Spectator magazine is home to wonderful writing, insightful analysis, and unrivaled books and arts reviews. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online. Alongside that, you get a £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots. I'm Lucy Dunn and today I'm joined by James Heal and Michael Simmons. On Thursday afternoon, Prime Minister Keir Starmer gave a speech on the long-awaited UK-US trade deal. Not that his announcement went without a hitch, however, after first directing lobby journalists to the wrong Jaguar Land Rover factory in Coventry, Starmer then had his limelight stolen by the election of Pope Leo. Nevertheless, Starmer and his aides are celebrating the trade agreement as a historic one. So, Michael, is this a good deal for both countries, as President Trump has claimed, or does the US still have the upper hand?
Look, I think it's a good deal for both countries. I know people are making this point that it's still worse than the start of the year if you look at tariffs, because essentially US tariffs are going down versus what they were, and because he's keeping this blanket 10% on UK, ours are going up. But I think, although that's how it's being perceived, that's not how you should look at this. I mean, these tariffs are a tax on American citizens. So I think, you know, the fact that the wins we're getting on cars, the fact that we're going to be able to import more goods, which results in cheaper prices for a British consumer, I think it's good for both of us. That said, I wouldn't overstate its impact. I mean, these things are pretty small. We were just talking before coming on air about looking for a bomb in this. And there's maybe not a bomb, because there's not much in it. It is a starting point. I think it's worth reiterating what we said yesterday, that economists who have had a quick look at this don't expect this to really move the dial on growth. So it's maybe not that there's an obvious winner or a loser, it's just that there's not much there. You know, this is not a significant deal, but Keir Starmer would say, and he'd probably be right to say, that they see this as a stepping stone to a more fuller, bigger, beautiful deal.
Yeah, James, at a time when the Prime Minister is facing unrest in his backbenches over the winter fuel payment and disability benefit cuts, will this trade deal help turn things around at all for Starmer?
I think we're certainly right to talk about it in terms of the politics rather than the economics on it. I think that this was a pretty shallow deal. This was sort of economic development partnership. It's more a signal. And I just want to part the issue of Starmer for one sec. I think one interesting issue is the own domestic political pressure that Donald Trump is under. His ratings are going down. There is reports that he and members of the administration have been personally spooked by that. Given the sort of quick way in which this whole press conference was organised and there was a deal, the choreography was made very clear. It was at Trump's own timing and choosing. We've had reports of a deal in the brewing for weeks now. There was all the sense of like it was waiting for the Americans to sign off on it. The fact that he's done this now and is talking about a sort of comprehensive and sort of a big, beautiful deal, etc., making posts on Truth Social, trying to really build this up, I think that's a classic example of spin. It's Trumpian sort of bluster, let's make it a huge thing, because I think he needed a win. It also helps that Keir Starmer wanted this win. So I think that it's more the presentation of it. You know, you've now got Labour appeasers who think, at last we can go out on the media realm, we can do politics live and have something to say. And that's why I think that you know, they're going to be talking about it in a way as a sort of talking point, being like, we could do what the Conservatives couldn't. I also think it's a useful political wedge on terms of the right, because I think half the right is saying, oh, it's not a particularly impressive deal, and the other half are saying it's a Brexit win. And I think, you know, Labour were quick to sort of try and exploit Conservative perceived tensions on this. So Andrew Griffith said that it was a good thing. Benlock came out and she has this favoured line, which is Keir Starmer negotiates, Britain loses. And so she obviously was then like, we've been shafted on this deal, and it sort of will pick a lane. And so Labour was quick to do that. So I think that it's going to be important in terms of a sort of political narrative. And, you know, coming off the back of the India deal, as Michael says, it sort of enables them to say it got some feel-good factor. But I don't think particularly it's going to be something of real lasting significance. And as we've said, you know, I do think it's fair to say that we were still in a worse position at the start of the year, although I don't particularly blame Keir Starmer for that, rather sort of Mr. Trump's own preferences.
And there's one more bit of reaction this morning that I think is worth mentioning, which the government may see as unhelpful. Andrew Bailey, the Bank of England's governor, has been speaking, and sort of rather than hailing this deal, he's jumped the conversation straight back to being about Brexit and to be about the EU, and he said that we need to do everything we can to rebuild EU trade. And he specifically said that we have to ensure that whatever decisions are taken on the Brexit front do not damage that long-term long-term trading position. And, you know, he obviously has a point that in pure economic terms, if we were to open up our relationship more with Europe, that would be beneficial. But I don't know, James, how you feel. Is that a helpful intervention politically from the government?
I mean, it's all going to be sort of turning attention to that May the 19th summit between the UK and the European Union. I thought it was interesting, you know, first of all, straight away, the Liberal Democrats piled in. Abdurrahi is right, hailing his comments. And one of the senior figures in the party recently summarised their own foreign policy as, you know, love Europe, hate Trump. And that is basically what the Lib Dems are doing. And I think it's an interesting kind of point around Trump in terms of that narrative, which is that Reform are less keen on talking about Donald Trump now. They can see how his things like the Ukraine Oval Office stunt have gone down. The Tories are sort of split on the issue of Trump. Labour can't criticise Trump because they're in office and they need to work with him. So the Lib Dems have that whole political space to play with. And then, of course, as you'll know, Lucy, the Nationalists in Scotland and to an extent Wales as well. In terms of Bailey's comments, I think that the government would not necessarily want to have this sort of debate open right now. I think it speaks to certainly a sort of mood within the party. I think the sense, I mean, instinctively, Labour MPs are more pro Europe. You look, there are very few sort of survivors of the Lexiteer tradition left now. I think Graham Stringer is perhaps the only one. And I think that it's going to be something that they're very conscious of. And some of them are urging privately, saying, why can't we be bolder? You know, most of the Brexit coalition is sort of not going to be for us, or, you know, some of them, a fair number of Brexit voters are even dead now. So, I mean, why not sort of try and make bolder issue of being pro-European? But I think that overall, it's obviously going to be sort of wiped up, or what actually gets said on May the 19th. If I could just make one more point, which is that in terms of the India trade deal and this deal, the economist Andrew Lillico has pointed out they both seem to breach WTO terms. And of course, that was something we heard about endlessly in the Conservative government's 2016 to 2024, that some of these deals would breach, you know, WTO terms. And I think it would be fair to say that from that, you know, it does seem the sort of WTO and all of this stuff is just another example, another casualty perhaps of the post-rules-based system order as we look to the future. So I think that, you know, Starmer, who instinctively is a rules-based politician, is having to cope with a very sort of capricious and often unjust world.
From an economic perspective, Michael, what about the market reactions? Have there been any movement since the deal was announced? Are we going to expect anything?
Yeah, so yesterday it was fairly mooted because of sort of the small size of the deal, with the exception that obviously car manufacturers saw a huge boost because they are the real British winners.
And,
you know,
and of course, Donald Trump was there, so we got a Rolls Royce, and then Peter Mandelson, helpfully the Prince of Darkness, sidled up. Oh, well, I can sure arrange a discount. You know, sort of lots of laughter and banter. He does it again, Prince of Darkness.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, car firms have been big winners of this. The FTSEs opened slightly higher this morning as traders sort of digest that, but not a major jump, not an insignificant jump. And I think this boils into one. This was partly priced in, and my sense is that people in industry had a sense this was coming. I think some interesting thing was going on with certain companies sort of reopening their US order book in the run-up to the deal being announced. And I would just reiterate the point that economists don't see this sort of moving the dial, so I think markets don't either, but they, you know, they are up slightly, so it's been a positive reaction there.
And I've just made the point, not to get sort of in the labour criminology of it, but I thought another very assured interview by Jonathan Reynolds on Channel 4 yesterday. He is definitely someone, you know, with the steel in terms of sort of the business element of his brief. He's got DBT, and then the sort of second half of the deal, you know, on trade, he's having a good time right now. So I think that Johnny Reynolds is one to sort of buy shares in if you're sort of talking about good investment opportunities in British assets.
And Michael, while we've got you, the Bank of England yesterday cut interest rates to 4.25%, the lowest rate for 2 years. How significant is this for the UK economy?
Well, at the risk of ruining my free day run of being allowed on this podcast and getting too geeky, I think that what we want to read into is how the 9-member Monetary Policy Committee of rate setters voted. Basically, the punditry and the market expectation before this vote was that it was going to be an 8-1, you know, landslide vote for a cut. And that would signify that we were going to see the fastest sort of fall in borrowing costs since the 2008 financial crisis. But the way the cookie crumbled in the end was 5-4. So it was on a knife edge, knife edge vote. And the language out of the bank since then is that they see a cautious approach to rate cuts. So I think that's slightly surprising. And it means that we're probably only going to get maybe at most 2 more cuts this year. And I think that was slightly unexpected. And it all comes down to how unpredictable everything is now. I mean, Andrew Bailey keeps using this language that because trade is changing every day. You know, forecasts are changing all the time. They just can't be certain that inflation has gone away and what is happening with growth. So it's significant for, you know, people that are renegotiating their mortgages. These cuts are coming. I would say if you do have to remortgage this year, if there's any way you can put it off to the end of the year, you're probably going to get at least one, maybe two more cuts. But yeah, I think the only thing to really read into this is that the bank has certainly signaled that they're going to be cautious when it comes to more cuts.
And again, of course, Labour MPs there sort of touting this as a sign of the government's economic plan working. How often we heard that under the Conservatives or near similar rhetoric? Just say also, I mean, that rate cut vote 5-4 makes sort of conclave look like a landslide, doesn't it? And I was drinking with a senior reform source when the result came in, and their first reaction was, is he left or right? And I think moderate was the word to the disappointment. So, you know, reform may be sweeping England, but not yet to Vatican.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you, James. And thank you for listening.